You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody, Here District. I am the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, here on this fantastic voyage, joined by my first mate, Chris Johnson, the only father and son tandem in the history of college basketball to win a national championship at the same school. That's the one caveat. And we are so honored to have a heavy hitter, Kevin O'Connor, man. We thank you, Kevin. Kevin's from Brockton, Massachusetts, a suburb. Mm-hmm. So that's that Boston thing, probably that Larry Bird jockage, that Larry Bird jockage, that Larry Bird jockage going on, man. Yeah. But it's all good, man. Kevin, welcome to Here District, man. What you up to, man? How you living?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just enjoying end of July here and looking forward to, I mean, free agency is still going. So yeah, we still got some good free agents out there right now. So I'm enjoying a little bit of downtime, but also prepping with draft stuff already for next year. So enjoying the summer, enjoying some time with friends. Went to a wedding last weekend. So things are good. Life is good.
Yeah. Could you rattle off a few of the free agents that are still unsigned as of this point?
I mean, Jonathan Kuminga is the one making all the noise this week. Right. And, you know, Josh Giddey still out there, Cam Thomas, Quentin Grimes, all the restricted guys. And then Russell Westbrook, a legend, still out there as well. So, you know, there's still some stuff to be figured out this offseason.
Restricted free agency, is it all that it's cracked up to be? It just, I don't know. With the guys you say that are still available, that's a lot of talent. Are you surprised that an offer sheet has not been tendered up to this point to some of these guys?
I mean, part of it is just the fact that, like, there just wasn't a lot of money out there this year. And I think the team that had a lot of the money, the Brooklyn Nets, they don't want Jonathan Kuminga. They don't seem to have much interest in any of these other guys. And so part of it's the market. Part of it, I think, is just the fact that these guys, you know, with the new CBA, it's just bad timing. Right. So I think it's a number of factors for these guys. And next year will be a little bit different with more money out there, more cap space. So I'm not overreacting, but it is strange. Like, we're entering August and the top restricted guys are still out there and they're probably going to get squeezed and not get a lot of money out there. So it'll be interesting to see how this actually plays out, especially with Kuminga being involved in so many trade talks.
Yeah. And what do you say to, like, the fact that despite these type of restrictions and restraints or whatever this summer, the Bucks were able to sign about five or six solid guys, rotation pieces, I would say, in my opinion, you may disagree with me, for around $22 million, $23 million, like at a serious number. Like, what do you say about the job John Horst did over the summer?
I mean, I think he did a good job considering the circumstances. I don't think he really could have done any better. Like, you have Damian Lillard, you enter the offseason, you have Dame out for all of next year with a torn Achilles, and you managed to take the risk in getting rid of him in the way that you did, and you changed the whole complexion of the entire roster, replacing Brook Lopez with Miles Turner, adding multiple shooters, bringing back Porter, Prince, the guys that you did. So I feel like for the Bucks, on paper, you feel like in this wide open Eastern Conference that there's at least something interesting here with how they're going to build this team around Giannis. Yeah. So I think Horst ultimately, like, he did the best that he could considering the circumstances, even though it's not like they got Kevin Durant or any of these big names that changed teams this offseason. I think Horst did excellent considering the circumstances.
Man, one guy that you were really huge on a couple of seasons ago, I'm just wondering where you stand on him now that the Bucks were able to sign Cole Anthony. You talked about him and just his personality and his approach to the game and I was watching, I think you did a pod on him or something, but some of the interviews and, you know, just the colorful conversation and then the confidence in this, man, this kid has, what is he, 25? Kid, this young man has swagger coming out the kazoo, man. What's your take on Cole currently?
I mean, I think with Cole, like, you know, all that stuff is true, like the off-court stuff, the energy and all that. And on the court, that manifests for him as a spark plug. You know, he's up and down. You know, like, he'll have games where he scores 20 and he's highly efficient. He'll have games where he's 0-for-8 and he's super inefficient. You're wishing he would lean into more of being a playmaker. So I think for the Bucks, you know, when you remove Damian Lillard from the equation, you still would like to have a smaller guard who can provide a spark in the backcourt. And so I think for the Bucks, getting Cole Anthony gives them at least a guy they can turn to in certain situations. Now, do you want Cole Anthony to be a key figure on your team? No, you do not want Cole Anthony to be that, considering his limitations as an efficient scorer, as a defender, as a smaller guard. And that's why I think for Orlando over the years, as the Magic got better, his role lessened. Like, he went from like a 25, 30 minute per game player to a guy playing under 20 last season for Orlando. So I think for him, like, he's probably, you know, maybe last in the list of guys that I think about when I think about what the Bucks did this offseason, including bringing the guys back. But still, having those spark plug guards can be important and win you a game or two here.
Well, Kevin, the last should be first, the first should be last. I mean, and Chris and I talked about this. Chris, I'll let you jump in right after this.
Yeah.
You talked about his defense, and we were talking about this when we first acquired him. I looked up his numbers when he played with Banchero and the big boy from Michigan with the brother.
Franz Wagner.
When he played with two bigs,
yeah,
his defensive numbers were actually pretty solid, you know. And I say that because of the Bucks and Miles Turner, Giannis. He's interesting. His energy, I'm taking a wait-and-see approach just because watching the videos that I've been watching on him, there's something there. I don't know what it is. There's something there, but we'll see how he plays. Go ahead, Chris.
What do you say to like the fact that he's the most experienced PG on the roster in terms of time and experience in the NBA? And I know, look, I'm not trying to be Mr. I'm defending Cole Anthony, but I see value in him, specifically what MJ just alluded to with his defensive presence in schemes with two bigs, having a responsibility to have to funnel and shade guys and just lessen the, hey, I got to pick you up full, be one-on-one on ISOs all day. Like, I feel like he's going to be a different player on that side of the ball. KO, like, what do you say to that?
I mean, I think there's some truth in that. I mean, it's not like he's just a smaller guard, and smaller guards are always just going to have their issues when they get picked on. But considering the circumstances, like you're talking about environment where you have Turner at 7 feet and you have Giannis as being one of the best defenders in basketball with length at the wing position, whether it's Kuzma out there or Prince, or whether it's Andre Jackson, if he's carving out a role, like whoever it is at the two and three spot, yeah, like there's length. Right. So I think with Cole Anthony, that's where certain lineups, maybe he adds some value. But ultimately, like, I mean, like you said, he's the most experienced point guard on the roster. And, you know, obviously Kevin Porter will get some touches as well doing that. But ultimately, I look at this team and I'm like, I want point Giannis. That's what I want from this team. Like, I 100%. Think it should be point Giannis for this group.
Well, Kevin, and to that point, Giannis point, excuse a little play on words, but to that point, so I was looking up some turnover percentage numbers, and it just really surprised me. Like Torian Prince, for example, and I'll just start with him, but he's like an 11th percentile, 14.1. Kyle Kuzma turns it over, he's in the 8th percentile. Ryan Rollins, just in the 27th percentile, almost 15, turns it over 15 times when he has the ball in his possession. KPJ, he's got a turnover percentage in the 24th percentile. A guy I love, Bouye, even though he hadn't had a lot of minutes, he's almost 28% turnover percentage. Giannis, you know, just under 11% as a turnover percentage, 72nd percentile. So, I mean, for those out there, like a former teammate of mine, Lloyd Walton, talked about Giannis' ability to handle the ball and the pressure. He turns it over too much. The numbers don't actually reflect that. I mean, he had a better turnover percentage than Dame. Dame's was in a higher percentile because he's a guard, you know, and he handles the ball in those situations more. But
right.
I mean, Giannis is not as turnover prone as I expected, especially in the context of some of these other candidates for point guard for the Bucks this season.
Well, I mean, I think that's where he's gotten better over the years too. I mean, like midway through his career, you saw the improvement in him, like being able to handle when teams are building a wall in transition and him being able to find shooters in transition. You see as he gets older, like at this point, just because he's 30 and he'll be 31 next season, it doesn't mean that he is done getting better. Like there still could be more layers that Giannis adds to his game and that layers he he might have to add, because like athleticism will dwindle at some point. It will slowly decline or suddenly decline in some guys' situation. So for Giannis, like adding playmaking over the course of his career, like last year, he had the best mid-range shooting season of his career as well. Adding these layers to his game are vital. And so I think with Giannis, like he did have one of the better passing seasons of his entire career. It just so happened that he's sharing the floor with Damian Lillard a lot of the time, who's absorbing a lot of the touches. But I do think like that last month of the season, it was like 7-8 straight games. It's not like it was a large sample size, but he had, right, I think, like 10-plus assists in every single game. Yeah. That he was the centerpiece of the offense, averaged like Jokic type of stats. I think with Giannis, I think he's capable of doing that because he's shown he can do it. But like when I interviewed Drew Hanlon, the guy who's been training with Giannis, helping improve his mid-range jumper and all that, Drew Hanlon said to me one of the reasons why Giannis reached out to him was because he felt like having a jumper would help him conserve energy and be healthy entering the postseason. Now, like using that same logic, would Giannis not want to have the full plate, the full demands of the offense over the course of the season?
Right.
Like being like this, you know, 10-plus assist guy?
Right.
That's my only question when I play devil's advocate with myself about point Giannis.
Sure.
Like maybe he wants to share the load over the course of the year.
The Bucks were 16-3 last year when Giannis had 8 or more assists.
Wow.
I'm curious, Kevin, about 2022, you're pretty much on the Giannis train as the best in the world, correct?
Yep.
What has changed? What changed to where Jokic overtook Giannis as the best in the world?
I mean, I think it's in part the postseason success since then. I mean, to me, I remember at the time when I was still on the Giannis's best in the world train, I had said, well, I'm not going to change who's best in the world until, you know, we see this happen during the postseason.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jokic wins a title and, you know, Jokic wins MVP since then. And he's had great playoff success as well. Whereas, unfortunately, whether it's due to injury, largely it is due to injury. Basically, every year ever since the Bucks did win the championship, is the team just has not exactly, you know, had much playoff success. And so I think that's part of it for Giannis, unfortunately, with the situation that they've been in ever since they won the championship. So I still think Giannis could take back that you know, belt of being the best in the world from Jokic. I wouldn't rule that out. I still think he's second or third best in the entire NBA. The only guy you could argue currently would be better is SGA. Maybe Luka next season, depending on what he does coming back in shape. But like Giannis on any night could still be the best in the world. And ultimately, I think the roster that they put around him, it doesn't necessarily have like the big marquee names next to him. But I still feel like depending on what Doc Rivers does with this offense and what type of role Giannis is actually wants to have, there's certainly a chance we could see like the best version of Giannis Antetokounmpo this season, considering the improvements he's made as a mid-range shooter, considering what he can become and has become as a playmaker as well.
What do you like about the fit next to Miles Turner, how both Miles Turner and Giannis will fit? What do you like about it?
I mean, ultimately, I just think like having front court flexibility is so important. And obviously with Brook Lopez, they did have that. But like he's aged. He's not quite the same player that he was before. Turner defensively is not the player that Lopez was in his prime. He is not that type of defensive player who's going to be an all defensive guy. Turner is not that, but he's a good defender. Yeah. Offensively is where things are a bit different. He is a good shooter. He's a connective piece. I think he keeps that offense moving fluidly if they want to play with pace. And again, like this is where like we can talk all these hypotheticals. It depends on what Doc Rivers does. Like we'll see what type of offense Doc Rivers installs, what type of offense Giannis embraces playing. But in theory, we saw Turner play on one of the fastest paced teams we've seen in recent years with the Indiana Pacers. We know he can play with pace. We know he can play with up-tempo offense. And I think that's where I imagine things around Giannis. I'm like, okay, like I look at these pieces with shooters, AJ Green, you get Gary Trent back. You have Andre Jackson, who's not a shooter, but he can play up and down, can play fast, yeah, can play positionless basketball. Yeah, he's an active guy, and I think a lot of the names on this roster, like that's the style of play that I envision and I hope they play this season. And Turner makes way more sense for that than Brook Lopez did. And if Giannis embraces playing the five sometimes more often, like they have like the number of like beefy bodies, you know, Kyle Kuzma adding him at the before the deadline last year, mm-hmm. where he could do that with more minutes than he has in the past.
And Chris, I want to get your input on this too, but is this a trend that we're seeing, a trend that's here to stay in terms of the two big lineups? They were highly successful, several 50-plus win teams. My list is here, Miles and Pascal, Şengün and Steven Adams. They had a 30-plus net rating in the regular season. Chet and Hartenstein down in OKC.
Mobley,
Allen, Carl Anthony Towns, Mitchell Robinson had a plus 9 rating. I mean, is this something? Why? I know it's something we're seeing more of, but why do you guys think we're seeing more two big lineups now compared to 2 or 3 years ago?
I think it's just in part the players that have entered the league, like these skilled bigs, Chet Holmgren, you know, Carl Anthony Towns, like space and pace and all that, like that era where it was like, you know, PJ Tucker playing the five. Now there's actual 7-footers that have entered the NBA that can do those things.
Knocked out a corner three like PJ can knock. Yeah, for sure.
100%. I think that's what it is more than anything else. Just the wave of players that have entered the league.
Yeah, I agree. With the way the guys can move, mobile, can stretch, rebound, you know, that's you got to go two. You got to go two of those type of guys if you have them. Can't keep one of those on the bench.
I think that's right, Chris. Like, isn't it like it's not just shooting either? It's the mobility of the perimeter, right? Yeah, it's all that. It's like keeping the ball moving on offense. It's moving your feet, being able to survive on the perimeter on defense. And I think part of it, like I always think, like you mentioned OKC, Marcus, like they last year in the middle of the season, at one point, you know, Chet's out, Hartenstein's out. It wasn't until like I think March where they finally had both of those guys healthy, and their head coach Mark Daigneault at one point was asked by the media, they're like, "Hey, the two big lineup is struggling. Like, why are you continuing to play it?" And he's like, "Well, the regular season for us is about experimenting. Sometimes we're using the two big lineup in situations where it actually doesn't make sense to do it because we want to get experience in situations that aren't good for us." And it was like this really like long-winded, like 3-minute reply that I think made a lot of sense to me because like having front court flexibility, like all these players have entered the league with skill and size. Mm-hmm. And so from a coaching perspective, I think having this front court flexibility and lineup flexibility where you can take on different shapes and play different styles, I think that to me is like the number one championship ingredient. Having versatility with the types of styles you can play. And I think for the Bucks, the way they built out this roster from the front office perspective, I'd imagine that's the vision here. The question now is like, what does Doc Rivers do with the pieces that he's given? Because they have a lot of different guys that can play different roles with Giannis being the center of that solar system. So I'm excited for the Bucks, man. I feel like everybody talks in the Eastern Conference about, you know, the Knicks and the Cavs and, you know, what's going to happen with the Celtics and Pacers this year? Like with their guys out, are they going to be lottery teams? But in the Bucks, meanwhile, still have one of the 2-3 best players in the world, and the East is wide open and things could be reshaped. And so I just can't wait to see the way it all kind of plays out.
Is there any world that you could imagine the Bucks cracking the top three in the East? Everybody we talk to seems to have the Bucks, and it's fine. I mean, you know, somewhere between four and seven. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say four.
Well, playing.
Like, yeah, 5 and 7 somewhere. You talk about the Cavs and the Knicks and Orlando and Atlanta, the improvements they've made.
Really?
That was my reaction too.
Gavin. I'm like, what? Really? You guys are hating on the Bucks?
Where do you see this Eastern Conference? Falling right into place for all the teams.
I think the Cavs, that's fair to put ahead of them. The Knicks, that's fair. The Magic, I love their additions. It's still going to have to do with what Banchero and Wagner do. Like your best players need to elevate their game. So we'll see there. Yeah. But like, putting the Hawks ahead of them, the Pistons ahead of them, I'm not quite there yet with those teams. Like you look at the odds makers, I've seen some odds. I think at BetMGM they have like the Celtics with better finals odds in the East than the Bucks. Tatum, we don't even know if he's going to play next year. So I have a hard time getting there. And so I think the Bucks, it's fair to put them like 4th or 5th. In my opinion, I think 4th or 5th behind Cavs, Knicks, and Magic. I'll give them the credit, I think, that they deserve as a team that could get better next season with good health. But I'm not putting the Pistons ahead of them yet. I'm not putting the Hawks ahead of them. And the Sixers, very well could finish ahead of a lot of these teams if Joel Embiid stays healthy, if Paul George has a bounce back year. But those are like massive ifs. And ultimately, I don't think you get a high level of confidence there. So the Bucks feel safe to me at four. And I'm a little bit surprised that anybody would have them ranked eight. That feels like too hot of a take, honestly.
Yeah, that'd be I mean, we'll take fourth in a heartbeat. I mean, we're hoping for better, but fourth sounds good.
Could be better.
Kevin, you also talked about Miles Turner. One of the things you like about him is his quick decision making. And talk about that. Explain to our listeners why that importance of a big in terms of today's NBA, where that fits in.
I mean, I just think, like, you saw it last year with Indiana, when you play with a guy like Tyrese Halliburton, and the speed and the tempo at which they played, your big needs to be a connective piece. And that was true on the other side as well with Isaiah Hartenstein. Yeah. Having a big who can make quick decisions, know the right angle to set a screen, being able to adjust quickly. And I think Turner, now 10 years into his NBA career, has gotten very, very good at those things on top of being a very good shooter as a 7-footer. So for the Bucks, depending on the style they play, that those traits are going to be highly valuable for them in a front court next to Giannis, and for a team that has a bunch of different shooters on the roster as well, can play five out, and having that spacer who can make decisions is of the utmost importance.
Yeah, the connective big is one of the most valuable positions, I think, offensively and defensively for teams, because it doesn't show up in the stat sheet, the things that he does, the shots he opens up, the lanes, the angles. Like, you don't do it. Like, I remember the Warriors with Bogut. Bogut was a nice connective big kind of dude from the screens and on offense, and how he moved, quick, fine step, knew how to play with guys. Turner, I wouldn't say similar to Bogut, but he's definitely connective in that sense.
Yeah, and when the Thunder picked up Isaiah, who's the son of a guy, Kevin, you may not have known, as Flo Hartenstein or Steen. What is it? Stein. What are we saying?
Stein? I mean, I think some of the announcers, Mike Breen says Hartenstein.
Stein.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes it comes out as Steen, Stein. Sometimes I don't know. Well, I say it all different ways.
His dad, Flo Hartenstein, played against Chris at Oregon.
Wow.
I didn't even know that was his dad.
You did not know that? Yeah.
I didn't even know that was his pop. I did not know that till just now, bro.
Well, and you look at Isaiah, you know, and Isaiah didn't look like a typical brother, to say the least.
Not a typical brother, no.
Not a typical brother. And so but he's got some funny stories. He told me a story at OKC about how he's been in situations where guys have started making some racially tinged comments.
And
he's got to say, hold up, wait a minute, you know, I'm half black, you know,
he's half
Flo Hartenstein.
Wow. He's half
Flo, he's German. Wow. Flo is German. Flo looks like he may be half black, and you know, black biracial.
We're gonna check on his DNA.
Yeah, but that's his dad. And so, but Isaiah, like, is real, you know, he's real into, like, hey, I gotta put a halt to all that. But my point is that, man, I've always loved his game because he plays so well, KOC, in that short roll position. You know, set a screen. His floater game with the Clippers first, and then who would go? The Knicks. His floater game was elite. When you look at his floater numbers, right in that little floater area on the short roll, and then with OKC, he does much the same thing. But he's got that mindset. I see some similarities with Miles Turner. You talk about decision making. You know, short roll, catch, on the move, shot, jumper, floater, pass. I mean, God, I mean, the potential with a guy like him, the flexibility, let me put it that way.
It's got
to have Doc Rivers and his staff salivating right now.
I would hope so, for sure. I mean, like, I think Hartenstein, like, he's got like an automatic, like, that little in between game. Turner, you know, not quite the level of Hartenstein, but he still can do some stuff in the in between range. You know, he's the type of guy that there's certain bigs in the NBA, you give them the ball in the post, they're hopeless. With Miles Turner, end of the shot clock, you can feed him and he can get you a bucket. He can be a pick and pop guy. He can be a guy who attacks a closeout here and there. He can be a guy who finishes loudly at the rim when he has space to launch as well. So the versatility, like that's always a thing. Versatility, flexibility, being able to score in different ways, being able to use different lineups, being able to defend multiple positions. Like that's the name of the game in today's NBA. And I just think like with Brook Lopez, he was a dominant piece for the Bucks when they won the championship with some of those playoff runs, but he is not quite that same player anymore. And so to go from him to Miles Turner, it kind of modernizes what the Bucks can be. And so I think that's very exciting. It's still surprising. I'm still shocked that they actually got Miles Turner, because after all these years of Miles Turner being involved in trade conversations with the Indiana Pacers, every single year it was always about trade talks with Miles Turner. And then as soon as everybody assumes he's going to go back and he's there to stay, he leaves. The craziest thing.
It is. When you look at the Bucks roster and you evaluate, you know, by position, where do you see the weakest sort of link, or the, you know, what position you think the Bucks are the weakest at right now when you look at the roster?
You know, it depends. If we're going to see point Giannis with him center of the team, bringing the ball up, you know, half court DHOs, you know, playing a more involved playmaking role than he ever has in his entire career, a lot like we saw end of the season in April. If we're seeing that version of Giannis, I think I would generally say, is there enough shooting around him on the team? That would be my number one concern, regardless of position. If Giannis is not going to be that guy, my number one concern would be just like, who's going to be the pure point? Is it Kevin Porter? Is it Cole Anthony? Like, are we going to see more of Ryan Rollins? Like who's going to be, that's going to help him run that offense. And I don't quite see that other guy that I would trust to do that on a full-time basis. If Giannis is not the guy who's going to be running point for the team over the course of the season. So I guess that's two different answers to answer your question. But ultimately, the overall concern still in my book would be, you know, regardless of Giannis's role, is there still enough shooting? And that ultimately is, I think, the true answer there, regardless of position.
Well, why do you say – I mean, you look at Torian Prince. I mean, he's got what? He's over 40%.
Top five in the league last year.
Gary Trent Jr. finished strong. I mean, Kevin Porter Jr.
AJ
Green up over 40. Ryan Rollins shot 40%.
I mean, limited sample size, but
Andre Jackson Jr. shot 39%. Shocker. Even though a small sample size, but
shocker. And I just that's messed up, man. Trey List is a listener too. That's messed up. Sorry, Dre.
No, man. I love Andre.
It was not a shot a game. Let's get that volume up, right?
You gotta shoot the daggone ball.
But also, like, I'm an Andre Jackson guy. Yeah. I think Doc Rivers needs to play him more.
Okay, started 43 games last year, but you think he kind of lost, fell out of favor. Okay, so let's talk about that. Are you an analytics guy? I know you are, but to what degree?
I'm both.
To what degree?
I like eye test. I like numbers. I like both.
The reason I asked, Andre Jackson Jr., his minutes dwindle as the season progresses, especially playoff time. But in terms of analytics, okay, so you got this triumvirate that I call them, and Kevin Porter Jr., Gary Trent Jr., and AJ Green. If you look at their on-court numbers when they played with Giannis, they're in the 100th percentile in every offensive category, I think, except maybe turnover percentage or something like that. A free throw rate, everything's 100%. Defensively, same thing across the board. Doc started them in that closeout game against the Pacers, game five or whatever it was back in Indiana. He actually started that crew and jumped out to a 15, 18, 20-point lead early, kind of faded down the stretch into overtime and whatever. But what lineup do you think? What starting lineup? Would you go with the analytics and go with those three great shooters, great perimeter defenders with Giannis? Or how do you think that's going to shake out?
Yeah, I'd go with the shooters, as many shooters as possible. So I'm kind of contradicting exactly what I just said with playing Andre Jackson for more minutes. But I'd start with those guys. I would just want to see Andre Jackson play more than, you know, 13, 14 minutes per game.
Why? Because
of the defensive intensity, because of the cutting and the activity and the movement. I think you can plug him into different spaces offensively. Like, get creative. Like, to me, get creative with Andre Jackson. Use him as a screener in a role roller. Put him in the dunker spot sometimes near the basket. Like, have him sometimes spotting up in the corner. Have him in different places on the floor. And I think that's where Andre Jackson was at his best at UConn. Like, was he was playing in a half-court offense with motion and movement and speed. And the Bucks offense last year was just not that. So I understand why he fell out of the rotation. But maybe this season things would be a bit different. But, you know, to answer your question, yes, I'd want to start as many shooters as possible.
Well, Andre Jackson Jr. is a hockey assist waiting to happen. I'm not sure what his secondary assists were looking like overall. But he's that kind of guy, that movement guy, that middle fielder like Zidane and some of these great – hockey middle fielders.
Oh, nice, MJ. What?
Rude Gullet. What's our guy from Udinese?
Rude Gullet.
We were back in Italy. We used to love watching this guy play with the Udinese soccer team. But to your point about Andre Jackson, so it's interesting because I thought Doc should have played him more, especially his first year. Yeah. Last year, he started 43 games. I think Doc feels like he's such an offensive question mark at times that he's going with more guys that he can kind of pencil in what they're going to do game in and game out. What you got, Chris?
To me, when Dre would do the thing where, you know, he have a wide open look or have a in rhythm, in the flow look, and he'd turn it down and try to make an extra play and do something else. Yeah. I think that sort of grinds on you as a coach because you just want him to keep the flow going. And so if he wasn't disruptive in that sense, I think he wouldn't have fell out of favor. But I think it was too many of those plays kind of compounded the issue. And Doc was like, man, I'm cool.
Is Doc where's Doc at with Kyle Kuzma? Because Kuzma, like, obviously is a great role player with the Lakers. He wins a championship and then he goes to Washington for 4 years. And I didn't feel like he quite flipped the switch back into Lakers version of Kyle Kuzma that I was hoping for. It didn't happen. Like, is that player still there? I mean, where's Doc at with him?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, man. And to his credit, he's in the lab. He's been doing great work with Clint Parks, one of our buddies out here in L.A. all summer long. We've seen him out at UCLA. I saw him in Milwaukee just consistently putting in really, really intense work. So he's aware of it if anybody is.
He dropped like this behind-the-scenes reality show, kind of filming him in Milwaukee KO, where he's kind of, you know, talking about where he's at mentally, and you should check it out. It's on YouTube. Just, you get a really idea of how locked in this guy is. He's locked in. He understands last year he stunk it up. He probably wasn't in the type of condition that he needs to be able to take on those type of defensive assignments that he's going to be tasked with guarding. And then the other side, he played a lot of small forward last year. I think he'll play more power forward this year, which will allow him to be a more active dude and not have to chase and run and just play I think he'll be Lakers Kuz next year.
Chris thinks he's a four. He thinks he's strictly a four. Kevin, what do you think that's the position he can thrive at in today's NBA? Has the game evolved where it's just kind of passed him by as a effective three man?
I think he's going to have to play some three too, though.
Yeah, he will.
He's going to have to. I mean, he's going to have to play next to Giannis and next to Turner in some lineups, or Giannis and Portis. So it's inevitable he'll have to. But like, I do think if Kuzma is playing some four, then that means, again, like, if Giannis is off the floor, you get a five who can space in Turner or Portis. If Giannis is willing to play the five, then you still have, like, all, you know, five guys who can switch out there because Kuzma can play the four. And so I think it's fair, like, to give him a pass for last season. It's hard to go from losing for four straight years with no expectations to win to suddenly start having winning expectations. And as you said, Chris, like, him getting in optimal shape, maybe he just wasn't in the best shape with all the losing. And
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I didn't feel like it. And so for him, I interviewed Kuzma years ago, and I talked with his mom, I think we were going to do a story, and just, you know, things changed that season. Maybe he had an injury or something like that. I forget exactly what happened, but like, he's a good kid. Like, I think with Kuzma, I think sometimes there's this perception of Kuzma that, like, he's lazy or that he doesn't care, or like, he cares about the wrong things. It's like, no, I think Kuzma, like, is actually a good dude and like a good teammate and a genuine person, and he works hard. And I think ultimately, if he is indeed in the gym this summer trying to get in optimal shape, maybe he's the type of guy who has a big bounce back.
So don't let the tats and the fashion sense fool you.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
I'm being silly. He's got some. Talk about outfits. don't know where why I'm segueing into this, but I'm thinking about some of the stuff Miles Turner wears to games, Kyle Kuzma. Oh, but we got some guys bad with
Gary Trent. The drip as well. The Bucks are the most dripped out team in the league next year. Watch. You got Turner. Turner's going to come in with the feather boas and all type of stuff. The leather.
More than OKC?
Oh, hey, it's going to be close. Neck and neck, baby.
All right.
I see some of these outfits guys wear, and I'm like, I'd say no to that. Like who's dressing these guys? Yeah. Like, some of the stuff they're putting on, Russell Westbrook over the years. Yeah, why do you agree to this?
This concept because you're skinny or in shape or have like lower than 5% body fat, you get to wear the craziest outfits of all time.
Did Russell Westbrook start that in this generation? Was he one of the beginners of just kind of you know? Put on a cardboard box and some platform shoes, and hey,
no,
I look sweet.
No, 100%.
Put on a dress, you know, a skirt or something.
Rodman started the dress in the NBA. Yeah. Come on, let's be real. Come on, my generation.
I mean yes. over my shoulder, I got Jimi Hendrix over my shoulder. Talk about people dressed in all flamboyant and
that's our guy
style and all that. Like,
what you know about Jimi Hendrix, man? I see that guitar in the background, but that's my all time favorite, Jimmy. Kevin. And so my fashion motif this season, I got away from wearing shirts and ties and all into flower pastel kind of Jimi Hendrix style. I got my tailor, this guy named Nas in Milwaukee, man. Give me the craziest, most outlandish flower pastel shirt you can find me, man. I'm wearing that with my suit. So
that's dope.
And it's Jimi Hendrix influence, man. That's my guy. I love Jimi Hendrix.
I mean, I love Jimi so much. He's really the reason why I started playing guitar.
Really?
You know, almost 20 years ago. I started when I was, 15, 16 years old. I love Jimi. Like him playing Machine Gun. You ever hear that? Yeah. The band of Gypsies.
Buddy Miles. Exactly. Is that with Buddy Miles?
My all time favorite is Who Knows on that same live from the Fillmore in 1969.
Over and over again.
Who knows? I can play that. And it's like 12 minutes long. And I might play it 10 times in a row, man.
Them changes.
Come on, man. You're talking my language.
Power and love. I mean, that album, people don't understand how good that classic, that freaking album is, man. And Jimmy and Buddy Miles, they make it go. So let's talk about awards. We had Jim Ozarski. Was it Jim Ozarski, Chris, who talked about, you know, when you're playing with Giannis, eyeballs are on you. People are watching you. And so now you got a chance to get you some postseason accolades. So I'm just looking. So Miles Turner as an all defensive guy, but most improved is what I want to focus on. And if you look over my shoulder here, there's a trophy here right by my what goes up goes in poster, kind of a glass basketball right there. Let me point to it if I can. Mm. Right there. Okay, that trophy there. Okay, that trophy, Kevin, Chris, is the very last Comeback Player of the Year award in 1986, which I won. Now, they discontinued the award after that year because there were too many guys with drug issues. Now, I didn't win it because of a drug issue, even though I could have. No, I didn't win it because of a drug issue. I had an injury with the Clippers, broke my hand first day of training camp, blah, blah, blah. Came back the next year, averaged 20-plus, made the All-Star team. Won Comeback Player of the Year. Same year that my good buddy, the late, great Bill Walton, won Sixth Man of the Year.
Wow.
After that year, they discontinued. Then they started the Most Improved Player. So I'm a run down a list of guys, and who would you think has a legitimate chance, Kevin, Chris, to win MIP, Most Improved? But some of these younger guys, KPJ, Gary Trent, Cole Anthony, Ryan Rollins, who has a chance to have that kind of breakout season to get those eyeballs on them?
I think Kevin Porter Jr., because he's only going to be 25, and like we've seen him have success, but it was in more losing situations or situations without any expectation of winning. Like if the Bucks are top three, top four in the East, and if Giannis is like in the MVP conversation, and if he's not the point guard still, Kevin Porter is definitely the number one candidate to take on that role next season. I would think to be that guy. We saw some flashes last year. He had some really good moments for the Bucks last season. So without Dame there anymore, who knows? Maybe maybe Kevin Porter Jr. has a year more like he did with Houston a couple years back, where he averaged 20 points a game, you know, 5-6 rebounds and assists, and he's put up big numbers in a winning situation. So I wouldn't bet on any of those guys on the Bucks personally, but I think of the ones you listed, Kevin Porter would be the most likely.
Hey, do you still I remember you used to like stream when you played like Modern Warfare or something.
Oh yeah.
Do you still do that?
Yeah, I did one yesterday, actually, for the first time in a long while.
Okay, I had to check it out.
It's fun to do, man. I had some nasty snipes yesterday playing, I love doing it. It's fun, like, to talk with people back and forth and talk basketball while chilling, playing Call of Duty. So
that was like my introduction. Yeah. That was my introduction to you. I knew you from that before. And then I was like, wait,
really?
What's up with this guy? Wow. I swear to God, dude. I was like, oh, man, this dude is sick. Yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah, I know.
It's a good time, man. Like, I think like everybody's got their own thing where they kind of sit back and chill after, you know, doing working or whatever. For me, it's guitar and Call of Duty.
Yes, sir.
I like doing. So,
and when I mentioned to Josiah we were having you on the show, Kevin, he got all excited. Tell him I said, what's up, man? What's your history with Josiah? What do you guys?
I think just connecting over social media. I mean, yeah. Like, he's one of the funniest people on the planet, and, you know, and the dude's awesome, and we connected over there. And I think I don't know, but Josiah and I maybe met in person only like once or twice, but he's like an internet friend, you know. Okay. You guys, it's pretty cool how you guys all do your own different thing in media. It's awesome. I
appreciate you,
man. We
appreciate you coming by here, District Man. Continued success to you, and man, please come back and join us once this thing gets underway during the regular season. We appreciate you.
Would love to. Thank you guys for having me. Enjoy your summers.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.